We're talking McDavid, Mahomes, Trout, Aaron Donald could be. You know, like, oh, yeah, we're not just sticking to Canadian hockey here. We're going across the border, every sport. Well, we said team sports, so I don't think golf would be included. But Al's brother, it's his power rankings. He can do whatever he wants. But I do think it's something that should be discussed more, and I'm not sure we're doing it, even though we talk hockey as much as we do. Mike Trout, Patrick Mahomes, Connor McDavid. But I think you can make a strong argument. McDavid is the best pro athlete today in his respective sport. Like the most dominant player in his sport
Mahomes?
Mahomes would be there. I can listen to arguments on Mahomes, and I can listen to arguments on Trout. But that's where McDavid is.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the hockey community should be yelling and screaming that. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our hockey analyst, Ray Ferraro. Ray, you're well-versed in a lot of different sports. Is that a hot take, a medium take, a cold take that McDavid is the best athlete in sports today in terms of team sports and dominance of their respective sport?
I mean, Mike Trout might be the closest to it. I mean, and the guy's the guy's otherworldly. But what McDavid's doing, like, I find this most interesting. The players in the NHL are really great players. Even the ones that people watch on TV that don't think are very good, they're pretty terrific players. And then you get a player like McDavid, who's just so much better than everybody else. Like, he's in a different class, what he's doing. Like, on Saturday night, when he got 3 points, I said to Cammy, we were kind of cleaning up, I go, Vancouver just took a penalty. Turn around, he's going to get his 100th point here. Like, it was foregone conclusion, man. Like, it was going to happen. I don't know anybody else that I can think of that's that dominant. Maybe there was a time when it was Messi or Ronaldo or somebody like that. But, basketball, I guess there was...
LeBron would have been that a few years ago, but LeBron isn't that anymore. I don't think there is that one guy in the NBA that is like clear cut.
No, it's McDavid. It is, isn't it?
Yeah, McDavid, in terms of his dominance of his sport, there isn't an NBA player that's there. Trout, you could make a very compelling case for Mike Trout. There's no disputing that. And I would say maybe Mahomes, maybe Aaron Donald. You know, football's so complex, 53-man roster, but. Yeah. Yeah, it's like McDavid, I think, is legitimately making a case for being the most dominant pro athlete today in terms of team sports in North America. That's how good he is, and that's what he's doing.
The way you just said that out loud, Hayes, I don't think there's any question. You stack him up against those people you just mentioned, I don't think there's any question.
And you also said North America. So I was trying to, like, Ray said it, like, was it... At one point, was it Ronaldo or Messi? I mean, soccer's such a massive sport.
That's the thing. Is Kylian Mbappe better than McDavid is? Maybe he is, but I don't have enough frame of reference for that.
But North America, I don't disagree. Like, I think he's such a cut above right now. And, Ray, I agree with you 100%. I was watching that game, and the minute that it was a power play and then it was a 5-on-3 for a bit, I'm like, that's it. It's over. Like, he's going to do it right now.
They wouldn't. It was so funny to watch because there was no chance they were going to score if McDavid didn't touch the puck. Tyson Barrie kept passing it to him like it was going back. McDavid was touching it every time, and that one pass he had that didn't work, and then it came back to McDavid again, and he went. You could see the seam open up, and then Dreisaitl's got that bomb that he shoots, and you're like, oh, here it is. And I rarely get excited watching games on the tube anymore, but I was excited to see that play develop, and you're like, man, he's going to get 100 points in 53 games. It's amazing.
It is. It's incredible what he's doing, and he's accomplishing something that really has rarely happened in NHL history. And I think sometimes we take for granted that the 80s were so wild and all these people were putting up points. But as you said on Friday, like Gretzky was putting up 215 points. You know, good for you. You had 130. That's awesome. I had 215 and 208 and 205 and 204. But McDavid has put himself in a class where you also expect it to happen. Now the next stage is it's the playoffs, right? Like he's going to the playoffs and they technically – made the play-in last year but did not win, so they didn't technically get into the top 16. But that's been lacking in terms of his resume because he hasn't been given that opportunity. The team hasn't been good enough to get there. And, you know, the same thing can apply with the guys in Toronto. You know, they've got there, but they haven't got out of the first round. So if you really want to build on that legacy, you got to start winning in the playoffs. You have to.
Well, so they've got the first block in, and now they're all a little older. They've all been through, you know, some rough spots themselves. And now it's the time we all wait for to see, right? Like the time that we're like, this is the most important time. So that's great. Now the book's closed. So now we want to see it again or see it in the new season. And that'll be part of the focus of everything that we watch this year for sure.
Ray, what did you make of Eichel's comments out of Buffalo today where I don't know if he claimed that there's miscommunication with the staff, but apparently he wants, I don't know what he wants. Just what do you make of the whole scene?
That's a mess. Like, how are you going to make that smooth over if you're the Sabres?
Yeah, I said so, earlier, Ray, that like I respect Kevin Adams. He's a former teammate of mine. How do you botch that up? It's like, you have the team doctors, you can get your own opinion. How does things go wrong there? Like, it almost sounds like he made it up to sound like things were worse than they were.
See, I don't know if you guys have ever had something where you've gone for a second opinion. I had one with my knee, and so the team doctor said one thing, and the other doctor said similar, but something a little different, and the two of them talked, and they figured out a course of action. Mm-hmm. And it just like, okay, and that became it. So I trusted that that was going to be the right decision. It seems like, you know, Eichel went for a second opinion on this neck thing. And somewhere between the second opinion and the Sabres, the difference is clearly the second opinion doctor favored surgery. The team doctors favored rehab. Something couldn't happen to get, like, there's something murky in there. And it's a mess. So if you're going to try and trade Jack Eichel, and I'm the other team, I'm like, yeah, well, wait a minute. He needs surgery on his neck, and he's not going to be ready for next year, or he's going to be close, or maybe not. And now what do you want from us? Like, how are they going to trade him and get a decent or an equitable return? Like, throw this year out the window. The guy had 36 goals in 64 games the previous year. Like 75 points. It's going to be a hard trade to make. And if you don't trade him, then you've got this cloud hanging over
you, can't bring
you all year. Like, how do you do it?
Well, and this is where it really, I think, it becomes even more personal. Like, I just keep thinking of Kawhi Leonard and San Antonio. When it feels like the team doesn't have your best interest, even if it's completely untrue.
Goodbye. You know,
but it that is where it gets ugly. Like, most athletes will say, okay, I know the team sucks and it's not going great, but I think it'll get there, and I like my teammates or whatever. But when you lose faith with the organization, and that's all I heard today, was Jack Eichel saying, we don't see eye to eye when it comes to me and how I feel and how I'm performing and how I'm supposed to go about my business here. Very rarely do you patch that over. Like, that goes above and beyond even the GM. That's when it gets into ownership and the medical staff. That's really ugly.
And that's a lot of bridges to try and fix, or maybe you just go ahead and say, you know what, this isn't going to work.
So what's his value, right? I mean, I know you spoke about, everyone knows who he is, what he can do, but it's murky because he's been on arguably the worst team in the league for the better part of 5 years. You know, like, who is he? What is he worth? How do you make a deal work?
Well, I get a friend who talks about this and says the problem with trading likely the best player in the draft is the other team offers you an and a deal. And that's we'll give you a first round pick and a this and a that and a this, and it doesn't add up to the player that you just traded away. So the problem becomes, if you're Buffalo, like, do you want players that you have to hope, like, you know, that, oh gee, they show lots of potential, they're young, they're 19 years old, and you know, wait 5 years for those guys. Like, how long does it go on? Like, before you say, you know what, we got to get a little better here. But what team is going to trade for Jack Eichel and give you their number one center back? Like, how are you going to pull that off?
Well, we were talking about that earlier, Ray. Like, you got to trade for somebody, and Brian made up a great made a great point. If you're trading for somebody with cost control, because Eichel's under cost control, maybe that player has a no-trade list and goes, Buffalo's not on there. Like, you've got to find a dance partner that if it's going to be a one-for-one, like a Line A for Dubois or, you know, Seth Jones for Johansson, like, those players have to be tradable. And, you know, you can't trade for somebody that's got a year and a half left on their deal before they're unrestricted. Like, to me, you've got to make this deal as quick as possible if you're Buffalo, but the longer you wait, like, this marketplace, it's such a weird situation. I feel bad because I think Buffalo's going to lose on this deal, and I don't even know what they're getting for him.
But Noodles, how could they make the deal? Like, if you're the general manager of the other team, and I call you up, and I'm like, hey, do you want Jack Eichel? And you're like, yeah, how healthy is he? And you're like, well, I don't know. Our doctors think maybe he could rehab, and another doctor says maybe he's going to need surgery on a herniated disc. And you're like, yeah, I want my doctors to look at him too. So your doctors look at him. Like, what kind? No matter what your doctor says, you're getting goods that have not been tested after the surgery. So you're gonna say to me, hey, bad break, Ray. This is what you get. Like, your offer is not going to be great. How could it be?
Right.
Go ahead,
that's
Noodles. Crazy.
No, I was going to say, so, well, let's pivot back to the rest. That's the biggest thing that we were talking about earlier. What would you do with McDavid? What would you do with Draisaitl? What would you do with Matthews and Marner heading into a week where really these teams are set in stone in the standings, but they still have games left?
I'd limit their minutes. And then the last game, maybe two, I would sit them. But I don't want them sitting too long, and they probably don't want to sit too long. So if you can, you know, these guys are playing like 24 minutes a night. Like, they can probably do with 17 minutes because the points don't matter anymore for anybody. And then you get a couple of games left, and you just sit them. And so they get... Well, you know what? I say that, but I don't know. Do we even know when the Canadian Division playoffs are starting?
No, that's a big part of the concern. Is there? And I would think the teams have somewhat of an idea, but they probably can't be guaranteed anything. And
so that's another layer of you know, trying to figure this out. Like, you don't want to sit around for 2 weeks before you play.
But don't you think the latest that they would start would be the following Thursday, so the 20th? The last game is the 19th. Don't you think the league would be like, let's get going right on the 20th?
And yeah, because the last games are Calgary-Vancouver, right?
Right.
Yeah, so the rest would, you know, everybody would be equitably rested prior to Vancouver and Calgary doing their thing. Yeah, I guess the 20th, what's today, the 10th? Yeah, so you're looking maybe at five days. I don't know. I'd kind of like 5 days off before the playoffs. That would be all right.
Yeah, it's probably doable. I mean, like if you sweep around and the other round goes to seven, you're looking at more than that anyway in the natural course of a scheduling in the playoffs, right?
So I don't know, but man, guys, I would hold my breath the whole time, though, for those guys. If they're even in the game, I would just be, by managing and coaching, I'd just be holding my breath.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to. I totally agree. And I would assume that that's probably what Tippett and Kiefer are going to be doing, to say nothing of other, you know, teams throughout the league who are just playing it out. Because you got to feel the roster. You got to play guys. And, you know, even if it's not your superstar, if you lose a second-line left winger based on something, that's important. You know, and that's going to make
this might be, if I were coaching Hayes, I think this might be the only time a coach would say, under no circumstance does anybody block a shot. Get out of the way.
Right. No fights either, right? Like, just don't do it if you can. Although, that's tough. It's a tough message to send.
Like, yeah, guys, you can't go out there and say,
I wouldn't have had a hard time with that.
No,
no blocking a shot, no problem.
But some guys are just naturally competitive. That, you know, the juices get going, a little stinky glove after the whistle. You know how it is. Especially these teams have played each other 100 times this year. Like, you think the... What do the Leafs have left against?
They got Ottawa on Wednesday, and then Friday they're at Winnipeg.
Right, so, Friday, Winnipeg. So, like, I guess the bad blood isn't, you know, there on either of those teams. So Montreal's gone. You're not playing them until the playoffs. So, You can't bubble wrap guys, but I just these are the ones that make you a little nervous.
That's the storyline, because you look at Leafs practice today. They're looks like they're going to be at 100% health. You know, at this point, obviously anything can happen. But Foligno is back on the ice today. Hyman's back in a full contact jersey. I think he's going to be ready. It'll be intriguing to see if they play him. You know, will he go one of these games, both of them, or does he just sit until game one of the playoffs? And Freddie Anderson was back with the main group today. I think he'll get one of these two games. So, you know, the Leafs are in a pretty good spot, knock on wood, in terms of injuries and in terms of where they're at. So, you know, you're holding your breath. You've wrapped up first and just get to the finish line and start the playoffs whenever that happens to be. You know, that's got to be the reasoning right now, the mentality, I would think.
Guys, remember that excitement just before when the season's finally over and you get to practice and, like, the playoffs are right there? It's like it really is a new page. It's like I remember, like, everybody was all excited. You had your meetings and you're just ready to go. It's like it's the best time.
Well, and it feels like it's going to be Montreal, and I'm getting, like, I'm trying to avoid putting a negative slant on this, but I'm getting Battle of Ontario flashbacks here, where we posted something online over the weekend, and naturally the reaction was not overwhelmingly positive, because why would you be overwhelmingly positive, especially considering it's a headline and people probably didn't even listen to the clip or watch it. But we discussed what the Habs are going to have to do to win this. And
right.
For me, you know, the number one option, and this has been the case for the history of time, is you get just stand on your head goaltending. That can happen. It happens to the best teams, happens to the worst teams. You get stand on your head goaltending, then obviously Montreal can win. Anyone can win the playoff round if you get that. And then I think the other option for Montreal is going to be they've got to be physical, they've got to muck it up, they've got to frustrate the Leafs, they've got to drag them into a brawl. And, you know, a lot of Leaf fans, I'm showing my age here, but I think younger Leaf fans are like, what are you talking about? The Leafs, look at what they've done this year. It's exactly what happened with the Battle of Ontario. Ottawa was much more skilled, better during the regular season, and the Leafs dragged them into a brawl. And they had Joseph and Belfour in net. You know, like that was it. That's what they did. And they found a way to frustrate Ottawa, and they found a way to beat Ottawa. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen here.
Please.
The shoe's on the other foot here. Like, the Leafs are clearly a better team than Montreal. They've proven it all year. They're more talented. They're more balanced. They're better. But doesn't mean that the Habs aren't going to try to come up with a game plan to drag them into some sort of series where they can win. Of course they're going to do that. But if it's going to be a skills competition, they're going to get smoked. The Leafs should roll on them. So I'm just trying to approach it in terms of what Montreal is likely thinking in terms of how they believe they can find a way to win the series. Because I don't see it any other way.
Yeah, check. Keep it close. Try and smother ice. Try and take room away from Matthews and Marner. Play the game in a half-ice game. Even though Montreal is good off the rush, don't get into that game because they'll probably not do very well in that. Scrum when you can. Frustrate when you can. If I'm the Leafs, if I'm Sheldon Keefe, I'm like, guys, I know it's going to be hard, but when the whistle blows, you got to stop. We cannot get dragged into a place where our focus is somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to do because somebody's going to punch you right in the face and you're going to want to go back at them, even if you don't, you know, you don't want to do anything else other than I'd like to punch you in the face, but you can't even do that. It's so hard, but that's really got to be part of their thought process for the Leafs.
I think you'll see a lot of different, like you might see couple different styles of games too, like on any given night. Like it might be a mud brawl one night, and then the next night there's open ice because maybe the team is off. Like I, you know, the Leafs have to play their game and impose their will. That's what I would say. But to your point, Brian, like Montreal is going to try and rattle them and off kilter them and use their speed and use their forecheck. If I was the Montreal Canadiens, the whole thing I'd be focused on is the forecheck. Because force that D, and the D are good. They can move the puck, but there has been times where they'll get caught in their own zone. And if that's where Montreal can do, like, but the Leafs have done a good job of finding ways out of that. That's the key. Whereas last year or the previous year, it was, you always called it the dog park defense. They got trapped, and then, you know, to me, there are plans now to exit the zone with efficiency. And that's where Montreal, they had their success early in the year. with a relentless forecheck and forcing teams to defend. That would be one way I would see Montreal at least trying to make it close in this series, in that series.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I guess, you know, it's not like either team's got a great power play. You know, like, it's not like somebody's got a great advantage there. I mean, Montreal's most important person right now might be their trainer and their athletic therapist trying to get Price back the game readiness.
Right. Gallagher, too, I would argue. Not as much, not as important, but neither of them are playing before the end of the regular season. Like Ducharme announced that today. So, you know, you're...
I mean, look at, when you look at whatever you want to look at with the Canadians, you know, you have to acknowledge it's Gallagher, it's Weber, it's Drouin, it's Price. You know, like, these are huge losses for them.
Mm-hmm.
What team can take that out of their lineup and expect to be the same team?
Yeah.
No, not many. Probably none. And that's going to be a big part of the discussion between now and the end of next week, is the status of those guys and who's available, how much they can give. And we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah.
We'll leave it there, buddy. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5:05.
Have a good one, boys. We'll see you.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They take away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Find out more at MapleToyota.com.